Start. Hello, everybody out there. This is H10, and it's been about a month since we've been with you. It's good to be back. I'm your host, T-Ray, and with me, as always, is...
Hello.
Hi, hey, that's not Wizzo. Either that or Wizzo's disguising himself. Is this Wizzo?
No, this is James.
James? Oh, have I got the right number here? What's going on?
Maybe wrong number.
Where are you at, James?
I'm in Manchester, England.
I'm definitely got the wrong number then. I'm supposed to be talking to Wizzo, who's in Hiroshima. Well, maybe Wizzo can't be here, so... Anyways, do you know the Hanshin Tigers? Can we talk a bit of Tigers with you this evening?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, James, it's good to have you on the line. Do you want us to go with James, or do you want us to call you something else tonight?
Okay, well, I'm James. My username online is Tubby Gaijin, so... Either or.
Tubby Gaijin. Oh, so Gaijin, that means you've probably been in Japan before or something like that, right? Is that the case?
That's right, yeah. I lived in Osaka from 2012 to October of this year, actually.
Oh, I see. Wonderful. Hey, folks, we're just kind of kidding around here. Actually, James and I know each other. We actually went to a Tigers game together in September. So I decided it would be fun to have James on the show. Two Tigers games, that's right. Sorry, two of them. We went 1-1 together, right? I think we won against the Carp and we lost against the Giants, if I remember.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, James, it's good to have you on the line, and you're back in Manchester now. How are things going with you back in England?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. I've been back about a month now. I've got a job, pretty settled in, but it's cold, and I miss Japanese food.
And I'm sure that you're going to be missing the Hanshin Tigers, you know, once things roll back around to spring of 2016.
Oh, that you wouldn't believe, yeah. I'm going to keep up on what I can, you know, I've got my Toritelli subscription, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hey, it's going to be good to have you around for this session. And just
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I'm glad to have you on the line, man. It's really fun to talk to someone different and, you know, to get a different angle on the Hanshin Tigers. So today on the show, we're going to have another voice on the show in a little bit because I did an interview with Gene Backe, former Tigers great pitcher. And so we're going to be listening to that interview in a little bit. And then we're going to talk about Tigers news for the month that has gone by. And we're going to look at who the Tigers have acquired in the past month. And then we might talk a little bit about next year's lineup and what it's shaping up to be. So stick around. We'll be back in a little bit right after the music's over. All right, James, or Tubby, or Gaijin, I'll call you James. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Yeah, it's probably better, especially we know each other. I feel weird calling you Tubby for a whole show. So, anyways.
First time, don't worry.
All right, well, anyways, I'll save you from the trauma. So, James, anyways, as you know, or as you just heard, I interviewed Gene Backe. And, you know, I've actually known him for a while, and I just want to share with you and with the folks how I got to know him. It's kind of an interesting story. Last season, actually, I was looking up some information on Randy Messenger because he was having a pretty good autumn, and I thought he might have a chance to get the Eiji Sawamura Award, which is like the Cy Young Award of Japanese baseball. And as I was looking up Eiji Sawamura Award, I was wondering if any other foreigners had ever won it. So I went and I found a list of foreigners that had won it before. Sorry, the list was only one foreigner. It happened to be Gene Backe. So what I did was I did a quick Google search. I read a little bit about him. I read his Wikipedia article and stuff like that. And then I found him on Facebook. So I thought, oh, it'd be interesting to see if this is the Gene Backe. Sure enough, it was. I put in a friend request thinking, well, he probably won't accept it or he may not notice it, but he did. And then, you know, we actually started to talk personally and I've actually had a few chances to chat with him on FaceTime. He's a great guy. He's living in Louisiana now and he's, I think, 78 years old. He's, you know, he's well into retirement, but just a wonderful man. And so I got a chance to talk with him just earlier today, in fact, and we're going to play a little clip of that right now, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, on H10, our very first special guest in history is Tigers legendary pitcher Gene Backe, and I'm talking to him. He's all the way out in Louisiana. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time with us today, Gene-san.
Thank you so much for having me, Trevor. It's a joy.
You know, it's always great to talk with you, Gene-san, and you know, I've loved looking back on Tigers history and seeing your name in all sorts of things. And in fact, I was at the Fan Appreciation Day this past Saturday, and your name came up almost the second I came into the stadium. One of the hosts of the show was talking about you already. So you're not forgotten here for sure. I mean, people remember and love you.
I had the most enjoyable time in Japan. I mean, I always tried to be friendly. Being from South Louisiana, everybody talks to everybody. And when I was in Japan, if I was at the ballpark early and the ground crew was on the field, I'd try to help them out or just talk with them and ask them why they did it this way or why they did it that way. And then the fans, I just tried to be a part of the fans in the stadium. When they'd start cheering, I'd get out in the front of the dugout and I'd raise my hand and try to get them to cheer even more. I just got along with everybody, I think.
That's great. That's wonderful. So when it came to the grounds folks, and even if you ran into fans, I mean, how did communication work? Was your Japanese all right, or was it a lot of sign language?
The first few years, most of the people that I had experience with, they knew quite a few English words, even on my ball club. Miyake and Koyama and some of those guys knew quite a bit of English words. Then I ended up learning some Japanese words. I couldn't put them all together in a sentence, but I could at least converse some, just like when I'd go to the market. I could point to something, then the lady behind the counter would say it in Japanese, and that's how I picked up some of the words. But as far as on the field or on the grounds or in the, we just converse the best way we could, the words I knew, and then I'd ask them and they'd tell me and they'd ask, sort of point to some, and I'd tell them in English. It was just a sort of learn as you go situation, and we all enjoyed it.
You know, it kind of reminds me of my early days in Japan as well, because I went through a lot of the same thing. And I mean, there's a certain joy about learning language and mutually learning each other's language, not just that you're learning Japanese, but you're teaching them English, and it's a way to build relationships, isn't it?
It is, and it's a wonderful thing to know more than one language. I'm fortunate that I can speak French up to a point. I never did go to school to learn it, but my grandfather spoke no English, so I learned how to speak French from him. But my vocabulary is probably at a 7th or 8th grade level, whereas if I'd have gone to school, I'd have probably known a little, just like in Japan. I wish now, in the off-season, I would have taken 2 or 3 classes in Japanese to learn more of the Japanese language. Because then, even on the field, I was fortunate I had Mike Solomko, who was from Pennsylvania, and he was playing on the ball club, but he had married a Japanese girl, and he spoke, I would say, fluent Japanese, and he would interpret for me. Then in the 2 years later, we would end up getting Somada-san. Matter of fact, Yamada-san. Yamada-san played in Japan. They called him Oheso Den, because he'd catch it by the Oheso, by the navel. Mm-hmm. And he was my interpreter for the rest of the time.
Okay.
He was actually from California. His mom and dad were still in California. He went over to Japan to play baseball, played there a couple of years, and then what happened, poor fella? The war broke out, and at 18 years old, he didn't realize he had to go back to the U.S. He just stayed in Japan to play ball. Mm-hmm. And what happened? He ended up getting drafted by the Japanese Army, and they told him, you either get drafted and go in the army, or you go to a prisoner of war camp. Well, he decided to join the army. And they said, we won't send you to fight against the Americans. We'll send you to China. And that's how he ended up not being able to get back to Japan, to the U.S. But his mother and father, later on, I found out, would come to visit. And then finally, I think when I was there, he went to California on a tourist visa. They let him do that, and he went back. And he was my interpreter till 1968. A fantastic guy. So really, I didn't have to speak that much Japanese. Although I was fortunate he was there, because I could ask him some words in English, and for him to translate to me in Japanese, which made it nice for me.
So that's pretty good to have someone right on field to be able to translate for you, and you don't have to call out a special interpreter or anything like that, right? That's great. That's
it was
great.
Good. Yeah, that's right.
Now, we're in the off season now, obviously, and the Americans on the team, as well as the one Korean on the team, and the Dominican guy as well, they've all gone back to their home countries and stuff. When you were with the Tigers in your off season, did you go back to America every year, or did you spend time in Japan, or what did you do with your off season?
No, I came back just every other year. I know that I came back the first year. Mm-hmm. I was only there a few months, but I wanted to come back. And then the following year, I just stayed in Japan. Matter of fact, what happened, I had it in my contract that it would pay my airfare for my family and I to get back home. But if I didn't come back, it would still give me the airfare. So I was able to take that airfare and go to Taiwan one winter. And then one winter, I went to Hong Kong. And I traveled like that. And it was basically using my airfare. But I wouldn't come back every year, no. And the reason why is because of all the children I had. Mm-hmm. We, by the time 64, 65 came around, we had 3 or 4 children. So it was quite a bit difficult to travel with them by air.
Absolutely.
With all the kids.
Yeah. I can understand that, and I only have one son, so I can imagine with 3 kids, it must have been a whole big challenge right there.
I had the best wife in the world. The year that we came back for good in 69, we had 4 children. No, 5. I can't remember. But she came back. Grandma by herself. I just got operated on my back.
Uh-huh.
I had a laminectomy done. That was in August, July, August. And I told them, they wanted to sign me again. That was with the Buffaloes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'd be taking your money. I said, I said every medical book I read, they said, don't go back and do what you were doing. So they understood, and they said, well, if that's the case, then we'll let you go. But it was just, I don't know, hard to leave. But she came back by herself with those kids, and I stayed back to get rid of some of the furniture. I think we had a car at the time. We didn't drive much, but we had a car.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to sell that and things of that nature. And I didn't want to leave without telling some of my friends in Kobe. And matter of fact, a good friend of mine was in Kobe not too long ago. I gave him your name, but he didn't have time to look me up. But it all turned out for the best.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, it sounds like you had a really fulfilling career in Japan. You know, if we get a chance on another date, I'd love to have you back on the show and maybe talk about some other issues or some other memories that you have with the Hanshin Tigers. And, you know, I just want to remind the folks out there as well, if you have any questions for Gene Baki, you know, send them my way and I can pass them on and he can answer them in future interactions or whatever. So, Gene-san, it was wonderful having you on the show. Thank you so much. And we look forward to talking to you again. All the best to you and your family, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, and enjoyed talking to you, and my regards to you and your wife, and tell your dad hello.
All right, will do. Thanks a lot.
And all my fans and even the groundskeepers, tell them to keep the grounds neat and manicured.
Will do, Gene-san. All right, thanks a lot. We'll talk again.
Okay, buddy. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, so, James, what did you think of the interview, or what did you think of Gene Baki as you heard the interview?
Oh, isn't he just such a nice guy?
Absolutely. Yeah, love talking to him. You know, it's like talking to a grandpa. You know, he's a little bit older than my dad, actually, so he wouldn't be old enough to be my grandpa. But, you know, it's like talking to an old man that's got a lot of great history in his own life and just a lot of wisdom that he can share. And, you know, he's just full of joy and full of fond memories of Japan. So to me, it's always fun to talk to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was here he was in Japan in such an interesting time, you know, early 60s. It must have been so different.
For sure. I mean, you know, I've talked to him a few times about this, but I want to get into some more detail sometime with him. But you know how the Tigers go on their road trip every August, right?
Hmm.
And they call it the Road of Death, or Shinorodo in Japanese.
Shinorodo.
And, you know, back in the day, it certainly was that. But nowadays, you know, they've got their two series at Kyocera Dome in the middle of August. And then they've also got the bullet trains. And, you know, travel's a lot easier. It's a lot more comfortable. They're staying in nicer hotels. But can you imagine in the 60s, they're taking local trains from here to Tokyo, and then from Tokyo to Nagoya, and then Nagoya to Hiroshima, and then back to Tokyo. And none of that is done on high-speed trains. They're not staying in really nice hotels. They don't get two series at Osaka, so they don't even get, like, you know, a three-day rest at home or anything. So certainly, even in baseball-wise, it was a different era in Japan, let alone, you know, culturally and other things.
Yeah, goodness me, that would have been terrible. You just would have been so worn out.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he talked to me a little bit about it this past time, and it didn't quite make the clip. Actually, I clipped it out. But, you know, he told me some stories about how his wife coped with the time that he was away, or, you know, things like that. And last time I talked to him about that, he talked about how they stopped in Himeji every time on their way out to Hiroshima. And I thought, well, that's interesting that they would actually make a full stop, because nowadays, you know, even if you're on the bullet train and it stops in Himeji, it's stopping for like 2 minutes. But he would talk about how he loves stopping in Himeji and getting some good food there and stuff. So, yeah. Fun guy.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, just a little bit more information on Gene Bakke for the folks that maybe don't know all about him. He joined the Tigers in the fall of 1962. He tried out for the team and made it as a pitcher. And in 1964, he won 29 games and lost 9 games and had an ERA of, I think it was 1.68 or something crazy good like that. He tallied up 100 wins in Japan, which is still the mark for foreign pitchers over a career. He's tied with a guy named Joe Stanka. And he was on the 1964 Tigers team that won the pennant. And that was the last pennant they won for 21 years. Definitely just an interesting life that he must have had here in Japan, for sure.
100 wins. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, you look at Randy Messenger, who's the current ace or foreign ace of the staff, and I think he's sitting around 60 wins or so. But yeah. Randy's also 34 years old, so, you know, for him to win another 40 before he leaves is, you know, it would take him probably 4 seasons, you know, 3 if he does really well.
I believe. I think he can do it.
Let's see it happen. I'd love to see it happen. But, you know, I think Randy's going to be back in 2016. I'm definitely looking forward to that. So, yeah, let's move ahead and see how he does in 2016. But before we actually get on to that, let's talk a little bit about the fall camp that the Tigers just ended last week. And I don't know how much you read about that or heard about that, but a lot of the players went down to Aki, which is a city in Kochi Prefecture, and they had a 17-day camp. It was kind of the first chance for Kanemoto to really kind of get a feel for the guys and for them to get a feel for what he's all about. Did you see any reports, or did you read any reports about that, James?
I did, and all signs point to people really liking what Kanemoto's doing. Very refreshing, you know, new angle on things, and players seem to be taking to that quite well.
Yeah, you know, I think he's much more hands-on than Wada was, and I don't really know how Wada handled fall camp or spring camp or anything like that. Like, I never really heard anything about how he did things himself. Yeah, I know he was there, but I never really heard any great stories about how he personally coached guys or he had certain guys in mind that were going to lead the team the following season or anything like that. He just kind of seemed to be a presence there. Whereas Kanemoto seems to be really, you know, taking the bull by the horns and saying, you know, I want you to be a leader on this team next year, or I want you to start swinging for the fences more, stuff like that. So it's good to hear stuff like that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. He's really hit the ground running. You know, he's come in and he seems to have this very clear plan of where he wants things to go, where he wants people to be, and I think that's what they need.
Certainly, yeah. You know, actually, I heard one quote that I thought was really interesting, and I hope I'm not taking it out of context, but I think he said something like this. I think he's on a 3-year contract now as manager, and he basically said, if we can win the pennant in my third year, I don't care if we finish in last place the first 2 years. If that's what it takes to turn this team around, to bring about the change that I'm looking for. You know, and that's really refreshing for him to say that, because he could have very easily said, oh yeah, you know, I hope 2016 we can win the pennant or whatever. But what he's really saying is, I hope that I can change this team and the core of this team. And the final result will be pennants. But that's not necessarily the goal for 2016. So that was great. I thought that was great.
That's great, and it shows that he's not worried about being pressured to show immediate results and things. And I've also heard that he's really interested in, you know, building homegrown talent. So yeah, he's playing the long game. I guess that makes sense.
For sure, yeah. I mean, he's definitely talked about, you know, definitely installing a Japanese guy in the fourth hitting slot eventually. And in Japan, that seems so much more important than in, say, American baseball, is having a number four hitter and having the same guy in that spot for the whole season or for several seasons on end. And so he's looking to have someone, like you said, a homegrown talent in that position, so that, you know, I think a decade from now or two decades from now, we're going to look back on Kanemoto's Tigers and say, oh yeah, that was the team that had Egoshi batting fourth, or Yokota, or whoever it might end up being. But, you know, he's definitely looking to do that, you know, build up a team that's going to be remembered, a team for the ages, which is great.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyways, camp broke on the 17th, and my understanding is, oh, by the way, also the farm team also had their camp at Naruohama during that time period, and Kakefu also was really starting to light a fire under some guys as well, and so it was really cool to see that as well. Anyways, when camp broke, the players were kind of allowed to go their own way for a little while, but then last Saturday, they had Fan Appreciation Day over at Koshien Stadium, and I was fortunate enough to be in attendance. Obviously, you weren't, but were you able to read anything about it or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, a surprising number of people that I know were there. Saw tons of pictures on Facebook and Instagram. Looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, it was. I did kind of a full write-up on my website, but I left out a lot of my opinion because I was planning to do a video cast, a vodcast or whatever, on Fan Appreciation Day. But I ran out of time and I just felt like the videos that I was taking didn't end up being very interesting. But basically my take on it was this. You know, there were some really interesting things going on there. And obviously the highlight of the camp again was Imanari, or not camp, pardon me, the Appreciation Day was Imanari. He tends to come out and brings out the comedian in himself and in others. And so he came out as a rugby player and a famous rugby player in Japan now. I don't know if you know who Goromaru is, but he came out and did a little impression, and, you know, he came out with a rugby ball and stuff, and he kicked it and, you know, and talked like him and looked like him and all sorts of stuff. But also during the Legends versus Current Tigers game, as he was walking up to the plate, I don't know if you ever caught that viral video, James, of the little high school kid that was like doing a super cool bat routine before he stepped into the batter's box. Did you ever see that one?
I didn't know.
Okay, I'll put up a link maybe with the podcast or whatever so people can check it out, but it's really quite funny. I mean, this kid kind of does like a nunchuck type of thing with his bat as he's heading up to the batter's box, and so Imanari did that as well, and it was quite funny to watch that. so it was good times. I will say this about Fan Appreciation Day. There were a couple things that I didn't appreciate about it. One of those being that they did like a, what was it called? Like a radio-controlled car race with the players where they took turns racing a car around the field. And, you know, they I think there were four different cars, so four different teams of four guys each. And whichever team could move their car the furthest were the winners. And to me, it's like sitting around and watching other people play video games. And it doesn't matter how famous a person is. I don't really care to watch others playing video games unless I'm part of the playing or they're my best friends or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So I felt like that was really kind of a waste of time. And then there were a couple other things that I thought. I think maybe this is just Japanese culture and maybe Japanese people find this amusing or fun or interesting or cute, but they took last year's draft picks and they had them do like a costume change. And so they all had to dress into different, they had to change into different quote unquote interesting costumes. And one of them of course had to dress like a girl. And so it was really cute or whatever, but I really just thought it didn't add anything to the show. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was cool. And then they interviewed the guys afterwards, you know, hey, how does it feel to be dressed as Moon from Line? Or how does it feel to be dressed as Bambino? Or how does it feel to be dressed as a Purikia girl or whatever? And their answers were quite bland. And so I felt like, well, what was really the point of this? I mean, it didn't seem that interesting to the fans either. So,
and they doesn't sound like they were very into it.
No, probably not. I mean, you know, we're talking about guys that are, you know, 20, 21 years old. And even though they are baseball players, they're still a little bit more used to being regular Joes or regular Takuyas or whatever, right? Than they are to being superstars. And so I don't know if they're able to take it with a grain of salt. Maybe they did feel it was a little bit embarrassing. And, you know, to be embarrassed in front of 43,000 people, I've never experienced that, but it can't feel too good.
No, seriously.
So here's my suggestion for next year's Fan Appreciation Day, and I highly doubt it would ever be taken into consideration, but why not do like a home run derby where you get like four different guys that either they're power hitters or they're future power hitters or whatever and say, hey, you know, let the fans watch these guys slug the ball out of the park or do their best doing so. Because, I mean, I would love to see that, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that'd be great.
Or why not have like a... I know they did this at fall camp, and I think they could have done it at Fan Appreciation Day, where they actually had like a relay around the bases where I think it was four guys. One guy would run from home to first, next guy from first to second, etc., around the diamond, and it was like a relay race to see who could make their way around, you know, once around the bases fastest. Why couldn't they do that with the fans, where we're testing guys' speed, we're testing guys', you know, ability to hit the ball over the fence, or even if they did like a pitcher's one where they had like I don't know if you've seen this on Japanese TV, but they have like a kind of a nine different squares, almost like a bingo square thing, and the pitchers have to try and knock out all nine targets or whatever, you know what I'm saying? An accuracy thing with the pitchers. Like, why not do something like that? I think that would be fun to watch, and it'd be exciting to see the guys. You know, these are guys that they take their profession seriously, I'm sure, and they want to be the best at what they're good at. So the guys that are power hitters are going to say, like, for example, Egoshi going up against Fukudome, going up against Yokota or something like that. And these are guys that pride themselves on being able to hit the long ball. And I'm sure they're looking at each other going, like, I can one-up you. And then they actually do it. And then they get to kind of, you know, rub it in each other's faces or whatever. I mean, I think that would be just a blast.
Yeah, I'd much rather see tests of skill, things like that, than people racing stupid little cars around, yeah. But don't tell me that you wouldn't have wanted to see Wada dressed as a minion.
If they could have brought Wada out as a minion, that would have been absolutely unbelievable. Or, you know, they could have found anyone, you know, he could have come out dressed as a villain from a movie or something like that, you know, like the Joker or I don't know.
Not too far off the mark. Yeah, because I don't know what it's like in Canada, but generally, you know, your end of year parties and stuff like that, it's the senior management that make fools of themselves. Not the new people. You leave them alone.
Right, yeah. And I mean, I think the idea behind that, I could be wrong, but you know, you want the rest of the staff or the lower people on the lower rungs to be able to look up and say, hey, these guys are not so bad. They're not as maybe as strict as they were all year, or you know, like they're able to take a joke, they're able to have a little bit of fun as well. And, you know, it gives you a chance to build that rapport with your manager or with your supervisor or your boss, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kanemoto, next year, you need to dress as... Any ideas?
You know what? We could actually put this up as a contest or as a poll on the website. You know, what should Kanemoto dress up as next year at Fan Appreciation Day? And so, yeah, let's go with that. You know what? We'll give you the email address at the end of the show, and you can give us your comments or whatever. Also, a couple other things about Fan Appreciation Day before we let this go. I missed this at the very start because I was late for the day, but Kanemoto actually announced the new team slogan. And the slogan, as you know, is Cho Henkaku. It's three kanji. It's kind of hard to translate because it's not an actual Japanese word, if I'm not mistaken. But it basically, someone on our H10 page translated it as ultra reform. I guess that's fair enough. I mean, that's pretty close to what it means. And then he added the words fighting spirit in English on the slogan as well. So do you have any thoughts about next year's slogan, James?
Ultra reform, it doesn't translate very well, does it?
It really doesn't, because ultra reform doesn't sound too exciting or yeah.
I guess it's better than go for the top as one.
Well, you know, maybe I can say this safely now because the season's over and Wada's gone, but I heard that slogan was kind of the butt end of a lot of jokes in the clubhouse last season amongst the players.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, obviously it was not quite as effective a slogan as maybe Wada hoped it would be.
Not as invigorating, but I don't know. If his performance at full camp is anything to go by, then I don't know, maybe this slogan's got some weight behind it.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that there will be a lot of reform, a lot of change, a lot of transformation within this team. And we may not see the results in 2016, and that's the thing that I want to always emphasize to people is that, you know, I don't necessarily think this is a pennant-winning club in 2016, but that's also really not the top priority, as strange as that sounds. Of course, they want to be a competitive team, but, you know, you definitely want to make sure that the attitude of the team and the fundamentals of the team and maybe their work ethic and things like that and the harmony of the team, all those things change.
I agree. They need to build a solid foundation for the future because, I mean, looking at next season towards the end, I think we're probably going to see another three retirements.
Who are you thinking is going to retire at the end of next season?
In the next season, I reckon maybe Fukuhara will go.
Uh-huh.
Who else? Oh, goodness, my mind's gone blank now. How about you?
Okay, actually, I will say, yeah, I don't know if three works, but I would say Tsuruoka might retire.
He's
30, I think he's 38, he'll be 39 next season. I think he's the same age as Fukuhara. And then Ando is just a year behind Fukuhara, so I kind of have the feeling that they're going to retire at the same time, Ando and Fukuhara.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, there are a lot of pitches. All my answers were pitches, and that didn't sound good. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're right, though. I mean, there may be some changes in that respect as well, but I know that one thing that Kanemoto is also talking about is getting that bullpen back up to where it was, say, 10 years ago when we had JFK going, you know, so we need to have a little bit more consistency. We need to have probably a little bit more youth in there than we have right now, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Change is what it's all about for sure. I'm looking forward to it.
Do you keep much an eye on the farm team? Is there anyone that you could see maybe going up to the main squad?
You know what? Let me just pull up the roster here real quick because it's been a while since I've really looked at the team's roster, and that's gonna help me to be able to see who I think has got a chance to make the move up. Mm-hmm. But as we're doing that, actually, let's talk a little bit right now. Let's make a little bit of a transition right now and talk about next season. And, I'm really blown this. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the guys that we have picked up since our last podcast, because we've actually had a couple of new acquisitions in the past month. Some of them more exciting than others. But as you probably know, the big news from today is that it's been made official and the contract has actually been signed, but Kyuji Fujikawa is back with the Hanshin Tigers after a three-year absence, if I'm not mistaken. I think he left at the end of 2012, is that right?
Yeah, and that's right, yeah.
2016. So he's back, he signed a two-year deal, and it's either worth 300 or 400 million yen. And he'll be wearing number 18, which is typically the number that's reserved for the ace of the staff, but he's taken it. I guess they've given it to him. So he's the first, and then we also signed a free agent from Chunichi, Akifumi Takahashi. He's a reliever. He's a lefty. And also we signed a third baseman named Matt Haig, and he's coming out. Yeah, another Matt, yeah. Yeah, by the way, folks, you probably know this is already as well, but Matt Merton is officially off the roster for 2016. He announced it on his website. He announced it on Twitter. He announced it on his Facebook on November 11th. So he's gone, and we've got Matt Haig now. He'll be playing third base, it looks like. And he was with the Toronto Blue Jays organization. He was on the AAA team, and he was actually the MVP of the league in AAA. He hit, I think it was 18 home runs and 92 RBIs, and he batted .338. So it's looking like he's a good hitter, but that doesn't always mean anything until they come to Japan and become good hitters.
Hmm. Yeah, and third base as well, you know, that's, well, not barring injury, that's traditionally been Nishioka's spot, so that makes me wonder what's going to happen with him next year as well.
So yeah, that's something that I definitely want to talk about towards the end of today's show, but yeah, what is going to happen with our infield? So let's just really quickly talk about these three guys that we've signed, and if you have any impressions or any thoughts or anything that you think might, you know, any good that might come out of them. And we'll start with QG because he's the guy that was with the team, and so we kind of know a little bit about what his strengths are or what could become of, you know, his position with the team. As most of us out here know, he was the closer on the team before he left. But what role is he coming back in? That's the big question, James. Do you think he's going to be closer? Will he be a mid-reliever? Will he be a starter? What's your take?
I don't think he'll be a starter, but I reckon that we're not going to know the real answer until we know the situation with O. You know, is he going? Is he staying? If O leaves, I could really see Fujikawa fitting into that closer spot. Otherwise, maybe a reliever.
I think the pressure would be on him to fill in as closer if O were to leave, unless the team decided to sign another proven closer or somebody that wants to be the closer. So whether or not Kanemoto kind of caves into that pressure or not, I think, you know, the media is going to put all sorts of pressure on, you know, the second that it's announced that O is signing with a major league team or whatever. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he wasn't the closer his whole career, and so he's used to being the setup guy, he's used to being in the relief position, but interestingly, I read his book a couple of months ago, and he was talking about how he wanted to be a starter with the team. And the reason is, and I think you probably know this because we talked a little bit with Randy Messenger's wife at one of the games we were at, and she had told us that on days when Randy is not pitching, he gets to leave after practice and go home. So if you're a starting pitcher, you get a whole lot of family time. And if you're a reliever, you're on call for every game. So you're at every game right until the very end of the game. And you almost never get to see your kids. And my understanding of Fujikawa is he is a real family man. I mean, he loves his family, both his, you know, his parents and his siblings, and also, you know, his wife and his kids. And so I wonder if he's going to make that request with Kanemoto, you know, like, can I at least try to be a starter or not? You know, whether or not he makes that request, I guess it still remains to be seen, but it certainly would be interesting to see him in that position.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it's possible. I mean, the starting lineup isn't really looking too bad. I think it's going to be, you know, the back end of the innings that's going to need filling, but, you know, try him out, see what he does.
You know, when we look at last year's starters, we had our big four, as they've been called all along, right? Messenger, Fujinami, Iwata, and Nomi. And then Iwazaki kind of came along nicely, despite his 3-10 record. You know, his ERA was about 3.5, which is not too bad. So you're looking at five starters there and a need for a maximum of one more. So, you know, if Fujikawa really is serious about being a starter, he's looking at fighting, you know, for one spot. Whereas if he says he wants to be a reliever, I mean, there's plenty of room in our relief squad, especially last year's group that couldn't hold a lead to save their lives, it seemed.
Yeah, I mean, we experimented with Nomi as a reliever towards the end of the season, didn't we?
In the postseason, he came in relief, yeah.
Oh, postseason, and, right.
Yeah, and there was talk of him maybe moving, you know, being shifted into relief. So I suppose that's a possibility as well, but it would depend on what he wants as well. And, you know, it depends on his condition. Nomi is 36 years old already. He'll be 37 early next season. So he's up there in age, but he's actually older than Fujikawa. I think Fujikawa's 35.
Fujikawa's, that's right, yeah, he's 35.
So, yeah, you never know. I mean, let's wait and see what Kanemoto does about that. We know for sure that the next guy that they signed, Takahashi, Akifumi Takahashi, he was a reliever with the Dragons, and he is, from what I've read, he's the kind of guy that knows his role. He is not going to try and demand to be a starter or to be a closer. I think he knows that he's a mid reliever, and he goes out there with that mentality, and that's the role he wants to fulfill and do it well. And from what I hear, he's quite good at it. You know, he's got a really fast fastball, and he's a lefty on a relief squad that, for us, I mean, we're really in need of lefty relievers, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know a great deal about Takahashi, to be honest, but
neither do I.
No, looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah. You know, I've been the kind of guy to this point where I pay close attention to the Tigers players and who they are, and I know vaguely of, you know, the main players on other teams, but I don't know some of the fringe players, or I don't know, like, you know, I wouldn't know relievers on most teams. So certainly Takahashi's not someone that's on my radar yet, but he will be now. I mean, he's a Tiger, and yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm still relatively new to the sport myself. I've been a fan since 2013 season, so I like to think I'm getting to know the Tigers pretty well, but yeah, other teams, you know, there are familiar faces, but doesn't go a lot deeper than that.
So we're about the same then, because I actually only started following the Tigers in 2014. So, yeah, really? roughly the same. Yeah. Only just
past
two seasons. Well, you know, I kind of dove in, and I really, what was the pill on Matrix? Is it the red pill or the blue pill? I took the one anyways that required me to stay in the Matrix forever, because I'm stuck, yes. Man. I can't get out. So here I am, you know, I just devoured as much literature as I could, and so here I am. You know, I just want to look at a list of some of our lefty relievers that we have right now, and some of them are on the farm, some of them are on the main squad, but as I give you these names, James, you'll see that we really don't have a great selection of lefties, or at least quality ones. So we've got Enokita, we've got Tsutsui, we've got Kojima, we've got Takamiya, we've got Yamamoto, and we've got Shimamoto. Those are our lefty relievers that we've got, and most of those names may not even ring a bell with you or with our listeners, because they spent most of the past few seasons on the farm.
Yeah, they're not really ringing a bell, I'm afraid.
Now, what that tells me is that not only are they not ringing a bell with the fans, and not only were they on the farm the last 2 years, they're not showing enough potential to be regular mainstays on the big team for 2016, and that's why we went out and signed Takahashi, is my guess.
Yeah, that'd make sense.
So let's see what happens in 2016 with him. Lastly, Matt Haig. You know, we signed him kind of as a replacement for Merton, in the sense of just having a foreigner on the lineup and another hitter. Did you manage to catch anything on him? I know I put up a YouTube clip on my Facebook page so people could check that out. Did you see that one?
I'm sorry, I missed that. I'm going to blame the time difference.
Okay.
He's coming from
He's coming from the Blue Jays, that's right, yeah, the AAA side. And, you know, obviously with him being a third baseman and them having the MVP of the American League this year was the Toronto Blue Jays third baseman, so there wasn't a lot of space for him to get up to the big club there, and so I'm sure he was really excited to sign with the Tigers.
Yeah, as he would be.
Yeah, and looking at the highlights, you know, it looks like he's got a really good bat. It looks like he's able to hit to all fields, and he even... In the highlight package, he hit a couple of home runs to the opposite side, so that's kind of nice to see because,
nice.
You know, it's good to be a pull hitter, but it's good to be able to hit to all fields, so hopefully he'll be able to do that with the big club as well. I'm excited to see what he does, and, you know, like I said, I've been a fan of the team for just 2 years, so the only foreigners I know, as far as the bats go, are Merton and Gomez.
Merton and Gomez, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see another... foreign bat and how he adjusts to life in Japan and life on the Tigers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the first that we'll see of him is going to be spring camp.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. I mean, I don't think he's going to be coming to town before that. Probably what usually happens with foreigners is the contract gets signed stateside. So someone from the team will go over there and they'll sign it there and fly back to Japan. So... yeah, we'll probably won't see him until February 1st. And actually, I'm hoping to be down in Okinawa for a bit of the spring training. So hopefully I'll be able to meet him in person. That'd be kind of fun. And just kind of see what kind of guy he is.
I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll be putting up reports on that as that happens. But that's not for another couple of months here. All right, James, let's jump into one last section. I want to talk a little bit about next season and the lineup and the roster for next season. And like you said, you know, what's going to happen with Nishioka and so on and so forth. And so just real quick here, my friends over at Tigers Cast, which is the Japanese Tigers podcast and a really good one at that, they put together a list of kind of the pluses and minuses of the team. So from the end of 2015 until now, what has happened? So I'm going to go over this with you real quick. So we're both on the same page and then we'll talk about 2016. There's 68 guys on the roster, and that includes the farm team and the big club. And so since the end of 2015, we have actually broken even as far as roster spots for pitchers. We lost Watanabe, Tamaki, Kato, and Fujihara. And we gained Takeyasu, Mochizuki, and Aoyagi through the draft. And we also picked up Fujikawa. Oh, and then we also picked up Takahashi. So we've gone plus one with pitchers. With catchers, we've broken even because Fuji retired, but we drafted Sakamoto. And with the outfielders, we have gone... minus three.
Whoa.
We have lost Kurose. Pardon me, this is infielders and outfielders together. So we've gone minus two then. We've lost Kurose, Sekimoto, Tagami, Hifumi, and Merton. And we've picked up Takayama and Itayama through the draft. And we've also picked up Hague through free agency. So on the whole then, what that means is that we have gone minus one. We're now a 67-team roster, and that leaves room for one more space. And so the question is, who do we pick up, or what position do we pick a player up in, or do we go for another foreigner or not, so on and so forth. And obviously, our closer is still undetermined. We don't know if O is going to sign with a major league team or not. If he does, obviously that's one more minus on the pitching staff. But... what do you think? Where do you think we need to shore things up a little bit? Or what kind of player do you think we should sign or try to pick up?
Gee, that's a difficult question.
Sure is, yeah. Sorry to throw this at you as a newcomer.
No.
Just as an extra tidbit, it may end up being filled pretty quickly here because my understanding is that they are trying to sign former Cleveland Indian AAA player named Murata, who obviously is Japanese, and I think he came out of the Giants organization originally. Right. And apparently he's really quite good. So, I mean, if they do sign him, then that takes care of the 68th spot. But it's not guaranteed that we're going to get him because there might be other teams going after him.
Okay. What position does he do?
He's a pitcher, and I'm not sure if he's a born and bred starter or not, but he is a pitcher.
I can't back it up. My gut says we need more in the outfield. You know, we've got Gomez covering. Sorry, go on.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I'm going to go with your gut on that one as well.
I was just going to say, you know, we've got Gomez covering first.
Yep.
We've got Hagar on third now. I've no idea who's going to be on second. I guess that could end up being a bit of a revolving door.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Merton was, you know, he was, was it left or right field?
He was left, and Fukudomi was
left field, yeah. That's right, right, yeah. So I think we need someone there, definitely.
So this is my take. I agree with you. I think that it would be great to pick up another fielder, and I think actually outfielder might be better, because you're right, there definitely is a logjam in the infield, and we do have our share of catchers. But in the outfield, we lost, like I said, we lost Merton, and then we lost a couple other kind of minor guys. We lost Hifumi and Tagami, and they're not really of any consequence. Sorry, guys. I'm sure they're listening, and I'm sure they understand English, so I'm sure they're insulted right now. Anyways, no, it's, you know, nothing against them or anything, but, you know, just looking at our list of outfielders from last year, we got Shibata, not too excited about him. We got Yamato, but he might end up playing in the infield. Fukudome, Yokota, he's someone to look forward to. Egoshi, Ito, I'm not sold on him yet. Nakatani, you know, he made a few appearances, but let's see if he pans out. And then Ogata, who a lot of people seem quite high on, but I still haven't seen anything great out of. And then Fujikawa would be Shunsuke. His last name is Fujikawa. And I'm sure that people who listen to this podcast know he's probably my least favorite Tiger. And then we've got Kano, but Kano seems to be setting up nicely to be a permanent pinch hitter. And I think that role suits him quite well. So there's not a lot of great names in there that I'm really excited about. And so I would say let's go for an outfielder. Yes, we did draft Takayama, and he might end up taking the starting role in left field. But I still think that a little bit more outfield help isn't a bad thing. With Fukudome aging as well, you know, I don't know if he would agree with this, but I'd like to see him maybe play 100 games and be healthy and be at his best, as opposed to playing 140 games and slowing down at the end of the year. So we definitely need somebody that's going to be able to spell him, say, once or twice a week through the whole season. I think that's the ideal.
I think so too, yeah.
So, you know, is that guy going to be Ito, or is that going to be, you know, Yokota? I'm not really sure, but it would be nice to have one more guy out in the outfield. Just an interesting note, James, I just read this before we hit the record button, actually, about a little conference that Kanemoto had, and he basically said that every position is up for grabs on the team, so go out there and get them, boys. And he left a couple of exceptions, and those were Toritani at shortstop, Fukudome in right, Gomez at first, the big four starting pitchers, and then Fukuhara as the setup man. Other than that, everything is up for grabs, and so let's talk a bit about that. Like, who do you think is going to end up in what position? And so, looking at the infield and at catcher, you know, we've got the catching position and second base and third base, according to what he said, that are up for grabs, but Haig may be the main guy at third. So what do you think about catcher? We've got Tsuruoka and Umeno coming back from last year. And then we got a whole bunch of guys that sat on the farm most of the year. And then we got this new guy, Sakamoto. Let me share a little tidbit about Sakamoto. I just read an article a couple days ago, and apparently he fancies himself as a pretty decent English speaker. And he hopes to be able to be Randy Messenger's catcher. And he said that way, you know, the interpreter doesn't have to come out every time we have a mound conference or whatever. We'll be able to communicate real well. And so, you know, I don't know how much to believe of that or how good his English really is, but it's at least cool to know that somebody in Japanese baseball cares about speaking English. And so let's see what happens with Sakamoto, and I hope that his bat and his catching ability are as good as his English ability.
Yeah,
I hope his English ability is good too.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, I mean, Randy had such a good relationship with Fuji by all accounts that, you know, that's going to be a really big hole to fill. Do you have any idea who you reckon might drop into that?
Yeah, you know, as much as I'd love to say, hey, give Sakamoto a chance, you know, rookie catchers tend not to start a lot of games simply because it takes a long time to figure out how to call a game in the bigs. You know, you have to know your pitchers. You have to know your opposing batters. You have to know all your signs. You have to know all your coaches real well. And so it takes a long time. So, excuse me, I can't imagine Sakamoto coming in and filling those shoes right from the start. So I'd like to see it be Umeno, simply because I think Umeno is the catcher of the future. And Tsuruoka is on his way out. I mean, he will be in his 21st year in the bigs. And he will be, like I said, he'll be 39 early in the season. So I'd love to see Umeno take more than half of the workload next year and Tsuruoka take a back seat. So if Umeno could be Randy Messenger's catcher, that'd be great. But of course, it's going to depend on what the big guy likes too, right?
Sure, yeah. No, I'd like to see Umeno step up. I got down to Narohama this year, and I was actually fortunate enough to see Umeno and Egoshi playing on a farm game. And, nice. Yeah, no, it was fantastic, yeah, just being so close to them. But Umeno was catching well. He got some good hits as well. Yeah, I think the kid's got a good future ahead of him.
He sure does, and I think he's got the right attitude, and he's definitely a hard worker. So, yeah, let's see what happens. I mean, it'll all depend what happens in spring training, I think. You know, that's where the decisions are really going to get made. But let's look over at second base, and this is a real interesting story, James, because I've read a couple of reports already that Nishioka may end up at second. And, you know, I think that's where he played when he was with the Lotte Marines before he went to the majors, where he kind of failed as a second baseman or shortstop or whatever. And then he came back to the Tigers, and he was in second before he made this transition to third as well with the Tigers. But he got in that real unfortunate collision with Fukudome at the start of 2014. Banged himself up real good, and then when he came back, Uemoto had taken over at second and had done such a good job that Nishioka couldn't take the position back, and that's how he ended up at third. So I've heard say that Nishioka will either play second base next year or he may get shifted to the outfield.
Right,
I've also heard that Uemoto may end up getting some time in the outfield as well. And then Yamato, as we know, has played both center field and second base. So it'll be interesting to see who ends up taking over at second or getting the bulk of the playing time. I'm curious.
Mm.
Yeah, what would you like to see there, James?
Well, you know, I'm very biased, but Nishioka being my favorite player. But I'd heard rumors that they were going to move him away from third just to, you know, get some stress away from that arm of his, but I guess it really depends on his recovery. You know, he might not even be in the starting lineup next year. That would be my fear. But I guess, if he's not going to be the starter, then I'd like to see Uemoto there.
Okay, sure. You know, Yamato made some great plays at second base during the playoffs, and even in spelling relief for an injured Uemoto towards the end of the year. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with that second base position. I'm with you, actually. I actually prefer Nishioka over Uemoto, but I do like Uemoto as well. I think he brings a lot of speed, and as long as he can learn to field, he'll be all right.
Yeah,
but he's not a great fielder, and so that's a big problem there. But interestingly, also at third base, we've just got a glut of players there as well, because we have Haig, whom we just signed, and then Imanari, who took a lot of the playing time towards the end of last year. And then we have Ryota Arai, who I don't know where that guy's going to end up. I mean, I guess he could play a bit of first, he could play a bit of outfield, he could play third, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of room for him. And then also we have Naomasa Yokawa, who is he'll be a third-year player next year, and he has not made it up to the big team yet, but he's one of the guys that Kanemoto mentioned as a potential big slugger for the team in the future. So there's a lot of guys that could play second or third, and I think that's maybe why Kanemoto kind of made this call out at the meeting today, and he said, hey, these positions are up for grabs. come and get him, guys. You know, because there's a lot of guys that could fill this position. And I mean, if things go well for them, they could fill them quite well. You know, they could do an admirable job. And so let's see what happens with these guys. It'll be a fun spring training, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are so many options, so many variables. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be Kanemoto. It's a tough decision to make.
For sure, but I think
you mentioned Yamato on second.
Oh yeah, why is that?
Well, I've always felt that he's a much better in the outfield.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, certainly with the glove, I mean, he did some incredible things, especially in the 2014 playoffs. But I think, you know, he's the kind of guy that he's going to do well in the field wherever he's placed. But his big issue, obviously, is that his bat is just so anemic. And
yeah, it's not good.
And the awesome thing is... sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say he's got such speed behind him that he's a really good outfielder.
So, yeah.
If he's just on base, it's kind of only half using his ability.
Yeah, I suppose. He gets a good jump on the ball for sure. You know, I was saying to somebody last year, I said, you know, why couldn't they have a position in the Central League called designated fielder, you know, instead of designated hitter? Because Yamato, like, if we could only use him for the defensive side of the inning and not have to have him at the plate, that's the ideal, man. I mean, he's just so good with his glove, but he's so poor with his bat.
He really is. Yep, designated fielder needs to happen.
Yeah. So Yamato, though, interestingly, Kanemoto has been working with him, but also Kanemoto said in an interview that one of his ideals for this team is to have a second, the number two batter, in other words, the number two slot after the leadoff hitter. He wants that person to be somebody that can hit the ball and that can run and so on. He doesn't want somebody that's just going to be able to advance the runner with a bunt or with a grounder.
No more bunts.
So essentially he's saying no more bunts, and he's also kind of saying, like, no more Yamato hitting second, even if he is, you know, in the starting lineup. I would suspect Yamato's going to be hitting eighth, maybe seventh. So that's good. What do you think of the outfield? I mean, like I said, Fukudome looks like he's, you know, set to be where he is, in right, you know, and probably more often than not he'll be playing. But that leaves two more positions in the outfield. And who's going to take the positions? I mean, is Yamato going to earn center field, or is Egoshi going to stay in center field? Is the new guy Takayama going to be in left field all the time or not? Are one of these other, you know, up-and-comers going to be able to get some playing time, guys like Nakatani or Yokota or even Hayata Ito? What's going to happen to him, or Ogata? What do you think? Like, what would you like to see in the outfield for next year, James?
Gee, well... I think what we're going to see is, I think we're definitely going to see Kanemoto trying a lot of things. You know, maybe for the first few games, things are going to move around a bit while he's just seeing what people can do. But I really like Egoshi, but I would much prefer to see Yamato out in the outfield. Just purely because I've seen him do some amazing plays in the past. But it's real difficult to choose, isn't it?
So, seriously, then, like, Yamato's glove and Egoshi's bat, let's make it happen, right? That'd be the ideal.
it would, if they could just switch out.
Somehow, they could fool people, or I don't know. Anyways, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. it'll be so interesting to see what they do with those three outfield spots. And, I mean, let's just list some of the names. I'll relist them and, you know, let the folks out there have some chances to kind of mull this over as well. You know, in our three outfield positions, the main candidates, I would say, are Yamato, Fukudome, Yokota, Egoshi, Ito, Nakatani, and then Takayama. Have I missed anyone? I don't think so. Those are the main guys that are going to be fighting, though, for those three outfield positions. So, yeah. Listen, I think we're almost out of time here, James, but I just want to kind of... send a little challenge out to the folks that are listening, and, you know, who do you think should fill these positions that we've got open on this team? What would be the ideal starting lineup for 2016 for you? Send us an email or post it in the comments on the website or on Facebook or wherever you'd like to, you know, get a hold of us. tell us what your ideal batting order would be or who you'd like to have at each position in 2016. We would definitely be interested to hear that. You can send us the email, by the way. The address is podcast@thehanshintigers.com. Or, like I said, Hanshin Tigers English News on Facebook. We've got the group and we've got the page. They're separate entities, but you can join both and you can post them there. If you want to send me a private message on Twitter, if you're following me on Twitter already, you can do that, @thehanshintiger. James, have you got a Twitter account or any way that you'd like the folks to follow you or keep in touch with you?
Sure. Well, if anybody's interested, my Twitter handle is @tubbygaijin. And you can find everything on there. I've got a website as well, tubbygaijin.com. Yeah, that's about it.
Awesome. Well, James, it's been great chatting with you for the past hour-ish. I really enjoy, just sharing ideas with people. So thanks for joining me for this hour.
No, likewise. It's been absolute pleasure. Yeah. Sometimes my ideas don't really vocalize very well, but I've really enjoyed talking with you today. It's been great.
Well, yeah, like I said, the pleasure's all mine. And folks, you know, if you'd love to join in on a show sometime, or if you want to just do like a spot interview and we can kind of plug you into the show sometime, let me know, because I'm totally open to having special guests on the show anytime and every time. We are going to put an end to today's show, though. Thank you for listening all the way to the end, and hopefully we'll be back one more time before the end of 2015, and then we're going to go fire on all cylinders in 2016. One more quick reminder, folks, if you have any ideas for a new logo design, the contest is still open for another about 10 days. So if you want to send that off to me or post it on the Facebook page or whatever, please do so. We're looking for a new look in 2016, so keep that in mind. In the meantime, though, hope all of you Americans out there have a happy Thanksgiving. And for the rest of you, just have a great end to November and head into December firing on all cylinders. Let's go, Tigers. Hope you have a good off-season. Take care, James. Have a good night.
Take care.
All right.
Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.